from fighters to carriers to submarines, the Navy wants to network its weapon system so their warfighting capability is greater than the sum of its parts. That task falls to Rear Admiral Michael Manazer, who was appointed just last week as the Deputy Chief of Naval Operations for Warfare Systems. Before that, he was Director of the Navy's Air Warfare Division. Manazer spoke to Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu at the annual Sea Air Space Conference in National Harbor, Maryland.
Thanks for the opportunity, by the way, and my new role is very exciting because the concepts that we were thinking about in naval aviation, a systems of systems approach, an integrated warfare approach, integration interoperability approach, and have capabilities that are across all of our platforms, vice just a platform approach, is the way that I am approaching, I used to approach about 50 times there, is the way that I am looking at all of our weapon systems. The ability to take what we have and connect them together so that we can all share the same picture, we can all share the same understanding of the battle space is the focus that I have. And so instead of arguing for a certain number of strike fighters, a certain number of ships, how do I take the capability that we've already bought and take it to a higher level? How do I get close to the technological limit of the technology that we have? And then add the man-machine teaming piece in there to understand where machine speed can help, kind of like technology does for us now with innovation and commercial industry, and where the man is in the decide or act mode. So you have a man-machine team that gives you a greater synergy of what the systems we have out there. And I think that applies across all of the domains, including cyber information domain.
And as far as all of those questions that you just laid out, to what extent does that thinking apply to platforms that the Navy already owns, and how does it impact the way that you go acquire things
in the future?
I believe
we need to energize a different set of questions. We have programs of record that have been produced on a basis of requirements that is stayed and founded on a JSIDS process at DoD 5000. As we look at those programs going forward, we have to be able to ask questions. How would we make this program of record a greater capability by combining innovation and technology to improve that? We have to ask those questions. We can't just stay in the, this is our program because that was the requirement. Or somebody says, when I ask, how do we put innovation into this or a new technology into this, they say, well, you don't have a requirement for that based on that foundation. We have to break that paradigm of the initial set of requirements driving this program of record, and we have to continue to ask those questions about why it costs this much, why it takes this long, why we can't take advantage of gaming technology, why we can't take advantage of augmented reality, virtual reality, those kind of things that industry is stretching into. How do we apply artificial intelligence to the things that now we have a machine that where the man is could be so much greater in that man-machine team?
CNO, the new CNO, as everyone knows by now, has his design for maintaining maritime superiority. How does your previous role in aviation play into that, and now your N9 role play into that?
What I do with the CNO's design is I channel his view of the design and the four lines of effort we have into warfighting capability. I translate where we want to go forward with these concepts of systems architecture, with this concept of innovation and technology, this concept of faster learning teams into the equipment and capability that gives us that design. The warfighting instantiation of that design is my effort. So primarily what we call the blue line of effort to strengthen power at and from the sea, that is primarily where the N9's focus, where my focus lies, in order to take his concepts and apply them to real warfighting. The challenge for me is to grab a hold of the technical limit of technology out there, to grab a hold of those good ideas in industry and pull them into the thinking processes we have to do just that.
You mentioned live virtual constructive training, I think in the context of integrating various warfare systems. To what extent does that also help you address some of the readiness challenges that everyone's facing with decreased flight hours in actual cockpits?
Thanks, Jared. I think it actually applies across all of that. So the ability to go out and have an immersive environment that you can really replicate most of the flight training that we have, with the exception of the G that you pull, the physiological environment, is very powerful for us. So we can shape more of our training into a simulated or immersive environment and reduce those flying hour dollars. That's the readiness piece. Second, our high-end warfight requires us to be able to take these things into a simulated environment. We can't practice in the open air. We can't divulge our capabilities, and so we have to go into a simulator or immersive environment. And then the other thing about our the reach of our networks now is geographically extends beyond the boundaries of our current ranges. And so necessarily, we have to go into the virtual constructive environment to be able to create virtual battle space. I can, through a virtual constructive connection between the West Coast at Fallon, Nevada, for instance, and maybe either Oceania or down at Key West, I can connect a battle force, you know, across country via this virtual network, and we have that capability now. The biggest challenge I have with live virtual constructive is in order to take data off of the airplanes that are flying live, I have to have an NSA-certified waveform to take that data off a high-end airplane and move it down to the site. So that's my greatest technological hurdle, is to be able to move that data off a live platform so I can fight that live platform with his virtual wingman who's down in a ground facility. But that LVC applies across our from our readiness all the way to our high-end training capability, and that's where we're trying to build that to a higher level.
Last question, sir, because I know you got to run, but also on readiness, the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee has zeroed in on the issue of aviation mishaps, particularly in the Marine Corps, but in all the services, really, positing that the higher accident rate is connected directly to fewer training hours. I wonder how that picture looks to you in the Navy. Is there a higher mishap rate, first of all, and is it directly connected to decreases in readiness funding?
So so the Naval Safety Center does a very good job of doing root cause analysis for all of our mishaps. And we have determined over years of flight training through just data analysis that when you have a monthly hour per pilot rate of 11 hours a month, if you get below that across the force or in a squadron, your mishap rate goes up. And so in the United States Navy, we call that the tactical hard deck. Mm. And so when we're training to all of our missions, we determine that 11 hours a month is our tactical hard deck. That's something we don't want to go below. If we do go below that tactical hard deck, of course, and we have less hours for that, then the commanding officers have to manage what missions the air crew are doing in each of those hours they go flying. We have to determine the risk assessment and risk management of the tasks that we're giving the pilots to go do as part of their training. If you have a pilot who is not proficient in his cockpit because he hasn't flown over a bunch of times, then you probably don't want to send him out to do a high-end, very complex mission where he has a lot of heads-down time in the cockpit, either day or night. And so commanding officers are managing those risk tasks. I cannot currently connect our readiness level of funding with an increased or decreased mishap rate. The Safety Center does that for both the Navy and the Marine Corps. I can't speak for the Marine Corps at all about their rates, but for the Navy, we do have a correlation of that. It is very clear that our readiness funding is not where it needs to be. We have been on the Hill testifying that we're too low in funding for readiness. We have critically underfunded a lot of our enabler accounts, which underpin the actual flying hours we're given, and we've testified that that funding needs to come up for us to be able to properly manage that high-end risk to do those high-end missions as we go forward, so we'll be truly ready to go.
All right, I'll leave it there, Admiral. Thanks so much for talking
with us. Thanks, Jared. Appreciate it.